The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised.
Oh, let's go!
Booty, booty!
It's time to get this party started.
Booty, booty!
It's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jim, and JC. All we know and all we talk about is
booty, booty!
It's time to get this party started tonight.
Yes, Mr. Sorensen, you just realised what Dubs Mansion did to us. But amongst all the greatness and the theatre of this past weekend, Jesper was wearing a black turtleneck, which has really upset one Amy Walsh.
If they lost, it would have been bad.
That's it. It was the first thought that I had. I do look at the coaches' fits. At what they're wearing. And in Northern Super League, it's become a thing. Katrina Peterson cannot put a foot wrong. Ottawa Rapids head coach. Anyway, oversized suits. She's just got like her look to a T, and it delights everybody on broadcast and the fans as well. But I mean, there are certain coaches that have their calling cards, and Jesper's calling card is cream, ecru, off-white, vanilla, slightly Infantino, right? Like, and, but more likable. And, he wore a black turtleneck, and I was like, Jesper, what are you doing? Why are you messing with a winning formula? But as Forrest just alluded to, not superstitious, doesn't give a shit, and it doesn't matter.
When you're bald and tall and thin though, you can really wear whatever you want.
I don't think you should wear a turtleneck though, if you're thin and bald.
No, because you lose the head.
Like a turtle.
Well, let's be honest. Nobody wants to do that. Nobody wants to lose the head.
No, I think you can wear whatever you want, honestly, because it just fits you. It's like the oversized suit you referred to there, Dubs. That's fine if you're a fit person.
Yeah, you have to have the frame, right?
Yeah, to hang off your coat hanger. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of baldness, we were sitting there last night. We actually were... got tickets to the Rapper game, and Alex, and after the game we met at a restaurant, and an old friend of his, an old LA Laker player, Derek Fisher, came over. Legendary guy. Like, I remember so well as a player. Like,
Very bald, super nice guy, super bald.
And Dan goes,
super nice, super bald.
We need to talk about how good he looks with his bald head. So I had my cap on, and I pulled off. I said, yeah, I got my bald head too. And he fucking started laughing.
Derek Fisher did.
I looked over at him. I'm like, fuck, dude, I just met you. I go, what are laughing at me?
So, what was the reason? Was it unkempt baldness in your part? Like, you hadn't shaved it for a while, or was it just...
No, I think he just thought I had a full head of hair, and it just shocked him.
Can you have a bad hair day if you're bald?
Well, you just alluded to it. If it's not kept up properly, right?
Yeah, right.
He does have a magnificent head.
Mm. It's shiny, right? Isn't Derek Fisher's head shiny?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should ask him about his routine. Is a little bit of oil? Like, what does he do? Because nobody wants a dull, bald head. You don't want to be too shiny, but it should be, you know, like taken care of.
Well, being a black guy, it helps. It kind of... Mm-hmm.
It works
dubs
for you,
it down,
it?
Right? Like when I take mine off and no tan, it's just like fucking sun.
Yeah,
I think it looks good for us.
If you're a black guy, I would go either bald, 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 or massive fro. Nothing in between.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't think he could do that. I think he's a bald guy.
You don't see the massive fros though on a balding black guy, right? With the like the horseshoe. You know, the you know?
Well, yeah, you start to see it on an Egyptian in Mo, remember? Yeah. And then
has he got the monkey's ass going on the back of his head?
Well, he was a few years ago.
Monkey bum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this. I mean, just I don't see why, but like again, if you're a big guy, if you're a fat guy, I think your only options are going bald and goatee, right? That's the option. I think it works for you. You look nails.
Are you describing me?
Hard. No, no. You're not fat. Jesus. You're the opposite to fat.
Well.
And anyway, you need the facial hair is like to define the
you
jawline?
Have to have
is
that the facial hair. You have to.
Hmm.
I think so.
Otherwise, it's Mr. Clean a little bit, isn't it?
The clean-shaven fat guy?
Mm.
Yeah, it's not happening. Yeah. Anyway, to the game.
As we digress,
this wasn't on the lineup. Surprisingly, no.
I'm just surprised that Forrest ended up at a Raptors game and he told somebody that he had an extra ticket. I mean, that's a big deal.
Well, Alex actually gave me more than an hour's notice.
So did you enjoy yourself?
Did I?
Yeah.
Oh, I had a blast. It was an excellent game. They're so fun to watch. Craig picked up the tab. It was a perfect night.
Wow.
Yeah. Nice. We held hands on the walk home. Yeah. It was beautiful outside.
You see Craig more than you see Tassie, don't you?
We're I'm in a couple of relationships here.
Yeah.
All right, to the football. San Diego. They will be Vancouver's opponents in San Diego on Saturday. Minnesota lost 1-0. Dane Sinclair didn't make a save. Craig, I mean, listen, it wasn't Dane's fault, obviously, but when you lose a game and you're so, you just aren't really involved, how do you feel as a goalkeeper?
And the goal he conceded would be one that you'd be, fuck, want that back.
Because near side, is that because it's near side?
Yeah, well, it just kind of went through him, didn't it? It was very difficult. Like, he hit it well, but I think he saw it. I don't think he was screened from it, but when it
beats you. He smashed it, though, Dreyer. Like, he hit it with power.
He did.
Some player, right?
Yeah. Oh, he hit it really well. But still, I mean, if you're thinking about the size of the goal that he beat him in a phone booth. Like, it just. So, and that was his only shot on net. I mean, yeah. Minnesota was probably one of the better games that I've seen them play. I saw all the Seattle games. They never played that well against Seattle. So good news for Vancouver, I think. If San Diego play at that level, Vancouver's got every chance.
Yeah, they weren't great, were they? And Minnesota, I thought, was probably the better team, although it was no classic, let's be honest here.
Mm-hmm.
How did you think it looked on the TV with that pitch?
What are they doing with the football lines? Like, that is supposed to be something of the past. And I think there's even fines in MLS if that's visible. I'm not sure, but I've read that, and it'll be interesting to see what happens because it looks awful. And I did read that the stadium's got a hybrid Bermuda, and they have no problem getting it off. And if there's any line showing, it's really, really, minor, and you wouldn't notice it. Well, fuck, certainly did. Mm-hmm. And the San Diego University run it. It's operated by them. It's on the university campus. They play lacrosse there. The San Diego Wave play there as well. So it gets lots of use. But the hybrid pitch keeps it up, and they do okay. But they've got to figure that out. They've got technology that should be. They even said it. 3 days at the most, they would be gone. And they played. They played 3 days ago.
More importantly, what do you think Hugo Lloris thinks of the pitch?
Ooh, yeah.
He'll be seething back in France or wherever it is right now.
Natural grass and football lines. There's,
it's terrible. I'm
not sure what's worse.
6-7.
No.
Well, they share it with the Aztecs, right? Is that the football team there? I think it is.
Yeah.
And the Wave.
And the Wave. Yeah, I know. Yeah. But the bed waves are the reason why this football lines on there, though.
Yeah. Hmm. They play lacrosse on there, too. So, you know what, Jimmy, where it is? It's right by Qualicum, where we played Mexico and Costa Rica in 2000. Demolished. That place was huge.
Yeah, it was massive.
Massive. Yeah.
Have you guys played on pitches with football lines? You must have done, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, is it? Because often from maybe not so much from an outfield player, but a goalkeeper in particular, you use the lines as your bearings.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm assuming for you too, Dubs, in the midfield, to a certain point you do. Does it confuse things as a footballer when you're out there?
No, because we were so used to it. But there was a trip with Nebraska where Karina LeBlanc, who was also legendary goalkeeper with Canada, was our goalkeeper for Nebraska. We had 8 Canadians on the team, I think, that year. We went on a West Coast swing where I think we played Stanford and then UCLA. And I can't remember whether it wasn't Stanford. They had a nice kind of little stadium that seated a couple thousand. it maybe was UCLA. We got displaced from like where we would typically play, and we were on almost like a turf complex where it had a bunch of different fields, and we were on one where it was a football field. So there like was just no way around it. And Karina came out, it was like the opening 5 minutes of the game, came out to claim like on a 30-yard line and like picked it up. I was like, what the fuck are you doing? Red card, and we played a man down the whole game.
No way. Wow, that's amazing.
Because she was so disoriented with the football lines. So of course it plays a role. And it's just you have to adapt, and it's just what you're used to. And so we are coming out of an era in that point in the late 90s where you were completely accustomed to it because you didn't have the infrastructure, you didn't have the stadiums, you didn't have the facilities, and you were kind of used to it. Even coming from Nebraska, which had loads of money from the football program, we had this great expansive kind of off-campus training center that had a dozen fields, and it was all grass, and it was really well maintained. But when you traveled, it was the reality of soccer in a gridiron football world. And so you have to be used to that. So as a goalkeeper, like that's just one piece of evidence for it. That's completely anecdotal, but it must have been nightmarish if you ever played on it.
Yeah. Yeah. It can. It's amazing how narrow the football pitch is compared to soccer. Like there's not a lot of space on a football field.
No, but that's where it's for the wide players, because the pitch is narrow. Mm-hmm. And then you got that thick white line for the American football line, and everybody's trying to play inside, and the manager's yelling at you, have an extra 7 yards to your left.
that's true. I see that happens. That's probably more so than it was from a goalkeeper's point of view. I never found it too much of a problem, but I know the fullbacks and fucking Jimmy with trying to stay in
the line. Jimmy, when you have pace, And you realize suddenly, oh, wait a minute, I got 7 yards to my right. Yeah. It's got to be a pretty exciting moment in the game.
It is a nice moment when you realize you can move. You're not so tight.
What is it? We're a New York City FC player, right? You know, Yankee Stadium. It's brutal. Mm-hmm. I can't believe there's not more made of it, because it's such an amazing stadium overall. But you watch games there, that's not... So it's not football. They're a really good team. They're in the conference finals, obviously. But no, man, that's another stain on MLS. As MLS is moving in all the right directions at so many levels, when they do switch seasons, they have to get this stuff sorted out. I know New York's going to have their own stadium. When is that, by the way? It's going to be pretty soon, right?
I think it's in a couple of years. Like Miami's going to move into their new stadium as of next year, and I think NYCFC might be 2 years after, if I'm not mistaken. Okay.
Because there's going to be more European eyeballs. And I'm not saying, you know, Europe is the be-all and end-all, but if you want to be accepted globally as a league, then the European teams and players and fans will need to watch you and respect you. I don't think, Jimmy, you can do that unless you have a proper-looking football pitch.
Yeah, that's true. You need a proper pitch, proper stadium. I mean, I remember playing in Kansas City before they moved into their stadium. We played the baseball stadium. Mm. And you're running down the line, you're running over the bases, a little bit over the mound.
Slide, Jimmy. Slide. Really?
They just like lay some turf over it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was terrible. Terrible.
Sometimes those mounds are actually hydraulic.
Oh, that's right. And they can...
Yeah. The one in Toronto is, I mean, obviously it's artificial, the whole thing, but it's hydraulic. Hmm.
Is that your flex for us? You only have one remaining mound, but it's hydraulic?
Hey. I don't know what it means, but it sure sounds good.
Yeah. I'll take some hydraulics. That's for sure. You know what? I was thinking, actually, when MLS does switch to the general football calendar season, there's going to be a lot more afternoon games, right, you'd think? Because you want to get the European audience on TV, don't you think?
Do you think they care about that? I mean, really? I don't know.
I think they do. They want to make it, they're going to brand it internationally. You're going to see more players making the switch now, I think, because of the windows. Don't you think that it makes more sense to have like 3 p.m. kickoffs, which would be 8 or 9 o'clock, some nighttime football to watch? I'm sure they're thinking more important
what they do locally and what they think they'll draw the best and the best time it is from locally. I don't think they're going to adapt for the rest of the world, because I mean, you know, is it Europe you're looking after? Is it the Middle East you're looking after? Is it the Far East, South Asia? I mean, what do you, I think they're just more worried about their own.
Well, I mean, okay. But on the other hand, I mean, if you're playing in Toronto in November, I'd rather watch a game at 3 o'clock than at 8 o'clock.
Well, that's the thing. I think when you went to the MLS season pass, they wanted to make sure that people knew when the games were. So it was an adherence to a Wednesday, like 7:30 kickoff and a Saturday 7:30 kickoff. And of course there were outliers, there were exceptions to that rule, but that's what they thought the way to kind of acceptance and breaking into that top four in terms of your sporting landscape was. But it's not, because you moved away from the local fans and the communities and people going to the games and turning out. So if there's going to be a challenge in certain markets with the weather, you want to have the afternoon games, not only because it's going to be more amenable to a fan sitting in the stands for 90 plus minutes, but it's also more inclusive in terms of people showing up and spending the day there, whether, you know, it's not really tailgating the way when we talked about American football and how that is just bred into the culture, especially in the US, but like all of the kind of the buildup, the in-game, the match day experience is pre and it's post. And you can do that more, I think, and speak to your fans more, include more families, include more types of people by scheduling afternoon games.
Well, Wonga, can you imagine, though, an evening game in November, right, in Toronto, for example? You've been at the pub since 3 o'clock. You're cozy, you're warm, had a few bevvies in there. You look out the window. Ooh, it's pretty cold out there right now. I could just stay here, you know, and watch the game on TV. Right?
Get it on a TV.
Yeah.
Charms.
In my booth.
You know you've skipped a game before. Right? Like, Canada's weather. I've been in pubs where I'm like, I don't think I'm going to go. I think this is more fun in here, right?
Yeah, I know. We've all right? done it. It'd be a concern. So I think you're going to see a lot more PM kickoffs, afternoon kickoffs.
Well, what about the NSL final where we were like, this is really cozy. Yeah. When Wonga was, I'd say, that far away from just saying, you know what, forget about it, let's watch it. We were all like, well, Dubs will kill us if we don't go.
In that voice.
I know. Oh, Dubs will kill us. Dubs was the influence there, wasn't she?
Yeah, but there was that lightning. The lightning break, and then that froze us, and then we found the Coinbase suite that I semi-broke into. The door was open. Jimmy, JC, and I slipped in and watched the rest of the game from the Coinbase suite, which I have to say, that's awesome. If Coinbase has that for the World Cup, it is a spectacular suite. Mm. Like full bar, perfect, right down the middle of the center of the pitch. It'll look amazing. So congratulations.
Who's FIFA's a Bitcoin sponsor?
I think it's Coinbase. No, that's Stadium. No,
who knows? You have no idea.
No, but we'll find out.
They'll have one.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Footy coin.
Footy coin? Oh, that's not bad.
It's our meme coin.
Well, let's start it. Yes. How hard can it be? Let's first of all, let's find out what Bitcoin is. And then we'll figure it out.
Let's not. But to loop it back to the discussion about the moaning about the surface at BC Place, and of course it needs to be better, I think, in order to attract more players like
that. Dub started. To loop it back to what I brought up.
Right, that's right. To bring it back to my excellent point.
We were weaving.
Optically, whether you're speaking to players who are maybe thinking about coming to MLS or coming to a market where you're playing on turf, is it better to have aging turf that maybe you train on different surfaces and you think about your maintenance and longevity of your body, or a place like Snapdragon where it is proven to be nightmarish? Like the women's national team played the US on it and it was waterlogged and it was dangerous and it was brutal. Like the drainage was questioned. So where you have lots of tenants and the maintenance of the surface, even though it's grass, is also not great. Like optically, which is better? Like, I mean, I think both places could use improvements. I'm not saying pick like, you know, the worst case scenario, but like both need kind of upkeep. Both need to be improved, I think, in order for MLS not to be taken seriously, but in order for it to be at a standard, I think that worldwide would be on par with other major leagues.
Mm-hmm. My bet is when they play Vancouver, there is no football lines. I think it's going to be a big issue and a talking point. I think they'll make sure that there's no football lines on there. And they're probably, if San Diego's play, they probably are away. And even if they're home, they're going to play on a, they'll be away because it's a Saturday game, I think, isn't it? Vancouver? Yeah. So they'll probably be away from home. So I'm guessing though.
Well, they're playing San Diego one, so it'll be at San Diego.
Yeah, they're the top seed. Yeah.
No, I mean San Diego State University Aztecs. Yeah. Like,
oh,
I think they'll be away from home because they play on Saturdays. So
sorry,
I would bet that that's the case.
San Diego.
Yeah, please.
To your point of Dubs, it's a crying shame, right? Because some of those, remember the old highlights? You still watch them on YouTube from the 70s and 80s in England and those mud bowls. I love those. And they're fun to play in. Aren't they a bit of mud?
No, they were shit.
Why? Because that ball gets stuck, you know, and it's just flinging up in your eye.
Oh, yeah, amazing. You're just playing on mud.
I love that. Didn't like it? Jimmy, come on. You must have played some crappy turfs over the years.
I did, yeah, and it sucks.
Oh. It's terrible. You're a speedster, though. You're a speedster, of course. Dubsy, midfield, come on. You liked the Quagmire, didn't you?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, there you go. See? Yeah. Proper football.
Get
there.
Stuck in. Yeah. Like a stud on somebody, of course.
Yeah. Bit of mud mixed with blood. Something about that, eh? When you come in and you we know when the mud starts to dry on your legs and you got like a wound.
Yeah.
And there's something about that I used to love at rugby. It's like, oh, yeah, I had played the match today, probably for the opponent, but I played a match today. Like blood and mud and the mix, and I love it.
I could see Sean just spreading mud on himself, making it out like he
actually did. Yeah. After his dad trays him to the other team.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, mud all over his face.
Yeah.
When he's playing snooker.
A big disgrace.
Yeah. You guys know
Mudface.
Sharms played like in an adult contemporary league, right?
Like, what's like adult contemporary league? Was it
like the music?
Is it soft. Like interpretive?
It was it was like Bolton, Michael Bolton.
Impossible here. Yeah. And then the point, and it's gone. Where wasn't that?
No,
great?
But speaking of interpretive dance, we used to do that in the locker room. Like Tank would be the DJ and then we would dance for like a few of us that like to do that before games. And we would like, I know, but you would like pass an invisible ball. It's like my story sounded better in my head before I started telling it.
Pass the ball. I bet the same thing happened at like Forest, right, Jimmy? There's interpretive dances between halves and that before games in the locker room.
Who? Me and my ball?
No, Nottingham
Forest. Or Nottingham Forest.
Hydraulic.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Right, Jimmy? Lots of interpretive dances between the guys?
Absolutely none.
No?
There was no dancing before a match.
Was there music?
Yeah, we played music.
Yeah.
Yeah, nobody ever broke out into dance.
No.
What a shame. So repressed.
Who was the DJ in the Canadian locker room? Start with you, like men's, in your era, Craig. Was it generally a DJ who was given that responsibility? Obviously there was, but who was it?
I don't remember. You know, I don't remember a lot of music in our dressing room. Do you, Jimmy?
No.
Really? No. Well, that explains a lot.
Really, we're more worried about that. We're like lambs of the slaughter. We
just shatting yourself.
Music. What are we going to be dancing about?
The death march. Dong, 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 dong.
No one stayed up late doing a mega mix on their cassette tape. Guys, I got a real banger next.
That's just for the record, that's thoroughly disappointing to hear that you couldn't talk about who the DJ in the men's locker room. Dubs, it's Karina, right? It has to be Karina.
I mean, maybe for a bit, but like laterally, it was Tank.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
A lot of headphones now, right? People listening into their own stuff.
Yeah.
You think in locker rooms now? Really? Is there own music? That's so sad.
I think depends.
Whatever gets you up.
Yeah, but like I think you see the players, come off the bus and everybody's wearing their headphones because that's very much like that was also my space. And I'm sure you guys were the same where it was like the visualization. It was thinking about the match, thinking about the task at hand and your role and everything that you wanted to bring to that particular game. When then you're off the bus and you're into the locker room and into that kind of collective space, some people still preferred to have their headphones on and that was fine. But the majority of us, it was like it was a shared experience once we got into the locker room. And I would imagine that depending on the clubs now and the national team setups, that it's very similar, that there's some players who still like prefer to stay in their own bubble and that's respected. But I would say also there's very much a culture and there's a vibe, there's an energy about the locker room and everybody sharing it together.
Okay, let's go around the table here. What was your go-to? Say you say you have the headphones on, the bins. What were you listening to, Jimmy?
Tainted Love.
It's a karaoke song. Over it was Jimmy's again? Rendition, yeah.
Was it really? Yeah. Your soft sell on.
Yeah. Or maybe a little bit of Boy George, depends.
That was Forrest, no?
Yeah,
that was
a bit of Boy George.
A little bit, a lot.
I listened to music quite once in a while. As soon as I had a routine, as soon as I was in, and I go get my massage, stretch.
I remember we were going to play in the Joe Robbie, I think it was a Joe Robbie charity match, and I was in the parking lot, and Jimmy rolls up, and I think it was a convertible, and it was like pounding Soft Cell, like just like it was cranked. And everybody's looking over. And he's like.
and he did his hammy because it was a standard.
Yeah.
What was your choice, Greg? I got in a vision of you wearing the Sony Walkman with the little foam.
Sony Walkman, yeah.
What was your go-to music?
I never listened to music.
You guys suck today. This is not. I should have pre-planned this. This route, is it worth discussing? Dubs?
Well, everybody is different for sure.
Mine was usually whatever I was listening to that was kind of like hard rock and like classic rock type thing. So it was
April
like
Wine?
No, Bad like Company. Like Foo Fighters. What else was I listening to? Like Pearl Jam, that type of stuff.
Yeah.
And you know what else I did on the bus? I read. This is like total nerd alert type stuff, like but
like a novel.
Mm-hmm. Well, like a Daniel Steele.
No, just whatever I was reading, and like I would do that first, and then I would like put it away, and then I would just very much be about like the music and just kind of getting centered and ready for the match. But like that really helped me kind of just zone in on what I needed to do.
Mm, wouldn't get motion sick.
Mm. No.
What about you, Wonga? You play football.
It was
bastardized football,
but it was funny. The music was only if you won in the back at the end of the game. Like, yeah, that's there were
celebratory.
Guys. Yeah, celebratory. And the guys who usually chose it, to be perfectly honest, were the biggest guys on the team. Mm-hmm. So you're listening to headbanger stuff, and I'm just like, oh, can we just stop? So, yeah. And it was mostly headbanger. Let's get riled up and get aggressive. So
after the match.
After the match, yeah.
Wouldn't that be useful, like, before the match?
Yeah, but music never really played a part in it. Yeah. Not in the dressing room. Yeah.
So what did you do to like prepare? Did you have like a routine?
No. Mine was, I was like out till 3 a.m. drinking, trying to see, kind of making sure people didn't see if I was hungover or not.
Warner was getting hot dogs and beer ready for the stand.
That's right.
Right.
In between plays, I'd go sell beer at the stands.
Yeah. He had a bunch of ladies lined up for later on. I know that much.
Well, you got to try your best.
Okay, well, listen, let's move on to our next segment today. And we have a little surprise for all of us because it's a comments section. We've been promising this for a while. You've been giving us some great comments. Great comments. We're going to get to some of them. But JC, take it away.
Hi, this is Gerald Ford. And this is comments on Footy Prime. Now back to the grave.
Gerald Ford, where the hell did that come from?
Well, comments, Gerald Ford, it just came together and I was able to get him. Like he was available. Oh, right. So yeah.
You're able to book him. Yeah. Well done.
The last one, US president.
I dug him up for that.
Was Gerald Ford, my God. Was he really controversial or not?
No.
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 So much took like over from Nixon. That's what that was the most controversial thing.
Okay. Right. All right. Well, that's Dubs. You got some in there. Well, you want to start with?
You want to start with me? You've got like seven.
I know, I can't see the screen from where I am.
Okay. Okay. Actually, I'll start with this one. So this is following. So the win. They tied Ecuador. And they won versus Venezuela, yes?
correct.
My God, what's my name again? I'm also wearing the same sweatshirt as yesterday's record. So before anybody comments on that. So this was Stefan Wolf who said, my nephew could coach this team better, speaking about our men's national team. And which I thought, okay, whatever, like get over yourself. Not really. And then this reply really made me laugh. Chefman 7127, and he said, would your nephew start promise?
Maybe Stefan Wolf's surname is Guardiola, right? In which case, perhaps he could coach better. I don't know. But it's funny, the promise, actually, there's quite a few comments about promise, weren't there?
Yeah.
People have opinions about promise. This one came from, I have to lean forward here, sorry.
Scottish Steam GT2.
Yeah. Promise David, all he does is score goals. I said the same thing as Jimmy when he came on. Watch, this guy is going to score as soon as he gets the opportunity. And lo and behold, Nico plays him in and the ball is in the back of the net. Make it work, Jesse. Figure it out. Mm. That was followed by another comment here by a longtime contributor to the comment section, Jeff D. Salisbury. I'm so torn on whether I think Promise should become Johnny's new partner. Our defensive shape is so dependent on the work the strikers do up top that if Promise isn't able to provide that, but Tanny is, I fear we'd lose our defensive stability. On the flip side, Tanny just isn't the automatic goal scorer. Promise is Mr. Guaranteed Goal, and good Lord, is that invaluable. Do we start Tanny and use Promise as the hammer, second half sub, if we're still needing a goal? Great point, actually. So Jimmy, I mean, Tanny and Promise are different players. Promise is such a big guy. There has been questions about his fitness. Can he play Jesse's style of football? There's no reason why a big guy can't play Jesse's style of fitness, style of football. But is that the reason, do you think? Jesse is at this point saying Tanny's got the upper hand.
Yeah,
as far
because
as
the way that he wants to play in that high press, leading the front line. Obviously, Tanny's more mobile and agile, can get around into those areas that he wants. You know, to set up those traps. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's about scoring goals. Goals win you games. And I think if you got a prolific goal scorer that's up top that can put the ball in the back of the net, then you got to give and take a little bit. And if it was me, I think I would probably start Promise. I'd like to see him for a full 90 minutes. I mean, he's doing a hell of a job in his club. So why not with this national team? Because every time he comes on, he scores. So everybody's got to compromise a little bit and maybe do a little bit of extra work, knowing that you got a striker that can't do the exact same. But I think why not start him?
Even if they get an hour out of him, it's definitely an option.
Mm-hmm. But Jimmy, put yourself in Jesse's shoes when he's comparing and he's looking at his best 11 currently. Does Tanny get the edge because he can just do all of that defensive work better? Or is it because Promise can't do it? And then if you put it on the flip side, or like looking at the offensive output, if Promise is going to guarantee you some goals, does that not give him the edge over Tanny in that regard?
Mm. Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, for me personally, in my opinion, if I've got a striker that can score goals, he's starting. You know, that's great that Tanny can do all the dirty work and run and chase down the ball, but I want a guy that can put the ball in the back of the net at the end of the day.
But isn't this team's identity now defense first? And the off-the-ball work and running hard and wearing teams down, which Tanny can do that, perhaps Promise can't. Isn't Promise more effective than coming off the bench against a tired back line, perhaps?
I don't know. I would want to start him because you're hoping you're only going to give a guy, say, 15 minutes to try to score a goal as opposed to 90 minutes you start. You're going to get more opportunities.
But I mean, Promise is clearly a very fit human being. He's a professional footballer.
Yeah.
Plays lots of minutes in Belgium, Craig. But to play it for Jesse Marsh, do you need to be a different level of fitness at that point?
Certainly a different level as far as the press goes. They're very good at it. They use it all the time. They're effective with it. And whether or not he can do it, I think he could, certainly for an hour. I would believe he'd be able to do it. And like Jimmy says, I mean, you get goals out of him. And Tanny, I'm just not convinced yet that he's going to get the goals when we need them.
Yeah.
scored on the weekend for Villarreal from about an inch out, but regardless, mm-hmm. little back heel. I like that. Mm-hmm. Tajan starting that play. But Dubs, I mean, if you are Promise David and you have aspirations to play for Canada at the World Cup, you're doing all you can to qualify yourself under what Jesse Marsh considers necessary, right? Mm-hmm. While playing for your team, your club team. I mean, how does a player get fitter when he's already playing for a club team and he's already in those training? I mean, his club manager won't probably take kindly to Tenny going off on his own and doing 10 laps when it's not part of the program, right?
Mm-hmm. But I think when we had Jesse on one of the first times, he was talking about translating the national team brand and identity and style to the players' club setups and doing the work and not doing things that are antithetical to what your club coach wants you to do, but to kind of blend them both so that when you're training and you're playing for club, you're working on concepts and principles that can then be applied back to the national team. So it doesn't mean that you're listening to your club coach and you're like, yeah, I'll do that, and you're doing something different. You're obviously, you want the minutes, you want to have that valuable time and the meaningful minutes in club. But at the same time, when you look at Promise, if he can show Jesse just in moments and he's looking at film and he's looking at Promise playing his matches, of course the goal scoring is essential. And that's what the critical element that he brought when he was substituted in for Canada and doing something that even John David hasn't done of late, which is fill the net. Like in the minutes and the opportunities that he's been given, he's been clinical and he's been scoring for Canada. And I think he's well ahead of everybody else in terms of his strike rate per minute for Canada. So if he shows that he can keep up the goal scoring for Union Saint-Gilloise, but then also do all of the subtle elements that he needs to refine his game and make it more well-rounded so that he's climbing up that ladder in terms of preference for strikers and being first choice, then, I mean, that's something that he is well in control of. Once he gets into camp with Canada, you just put in the work and you take away those shocking performances, in his own words, at training, so that you put yourself in good stead. And at that point, it's out of your hands, right? But if you're doing all the work over, these next few months, and you can do a lot of convincing even when you're out of the national team setup, when your coach is looking for key elements that he wants you to refine before you get back to national team.
And do you think, Dubs, I mean, when you think about the draws on December, 5th?
5th, yeah.
When they find out who they have and the opposition that they're up against, that could also change Jesse's mind.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. And I mentioned this, I think, a couple of shows ago, is that, I think Jesse Marsh is a smart guy, right? So, he's not going to have his blinders on about Canada and having, a lone style. He's not going to hem them in that way, right? Yes, they have a very clear identity, and there's a clarity about the way that they play and the roles within it. But mm-hmm. he's not dumb. He's going to set them up for success so that based on opponents, there are going to be certain things that they're keying on. And it might mean that certain profiles are preferred over others. And that could mean that based on an opponent, especially in a 48-team World Cup, Promise David might get the nod over a Taniel O'Shea. But he has to do everything in his control to put himself in that position. And I think that's what has worked against him in the past. Not to say that he's lazy or that he's not doing the work. I just think you look at the guy, I think there's still a raw what's the word I'm looking for? A part of his game that needs work. And that right now, over the last, 6 months, I think he's done a lot to endear himself to the coaching staff, but he's still behind Tanny in terms of who's preferred as that striker.
Mm-hmm.
I just think
in the level that he's playing at, right, the league level, Belgium is, it's not the Spanish league or the Bundesliga or Serie A. It's not. So I'm sure that's comes into play too.
That's a great point.
As a player too, though, as a striker. Dubs, I understand what you're saying, but it's got to be difficult for him as well, because if you're playing in a club team that says they want to play a mid block or low block, or mm-hmm. They've got different lines of confrontation, then it's going to be difficult to actually show Jesse a similar style to what the national team is playing if your club team doesn't play like that. Mm-hmm. Right?
True.
I mean, at the end of the day, all you can do as a number nine is put the ball in the back of the net and hope he's watching, saying, hey, I can score goals. We went four games without a goal in open play.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
And then the big man comes off the bench in the last match and bang, goal. Yeah. An opportunity.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a really good point, Jimmy. Of course, you can't, if they're playing a completely different style, you can't just start to do things that you're wanted to do with the national team because it would just look ridiculous, right? Like, you're not going to go rogue in your club setup. But at the same time, there's a whole portion of the game as a nine, as a striker, even if your job is, as Forrest frequently talks about, it's the hardest job in football, is to fill the net, is to score goals consistently. There's still a whole portion of the game where he's out of possession, where he's working off the ball. So can he show Jesse in those moments, even if it's in a different structure and a different system, that he's doing the work, right? Mm-hmm. That he's closing down, that he's close to his strike partner, that he's like doing the back press, that he's tackling, that he's winning the ball in dangerous areas. Like, he can do that with Union Saint-Gilloise, even if they're not playing the same way as Canada's playing. Right, there's a whole part of the game there that he can kind of, I think, promote himself for the national team, even though he's playing for club.
I think it's a great point you made too about the draw, what dictates how these players are used as well. You know, this isn't a one size fits all 11. It's going to depend on who you're playing, and because Canada's in pot one for the World Cup, that their draw. I mean, it's hard to know right now because it hasn't been confirmed. I don't think just yet regarding the playoffs. If those winners are going to be seeded as per their rankings or whether they'll all be thrown pot four. So it's hard to kind of have an idea for sure. But I mean, Canada could be in a group with, you know, for example, Ecuador, who they actually play quite well. And I don't know, Algeria and Curacao, right? Which isn't a terrifying group, a challenging group. It's not going to be an easy group per se, mm-hmm. right? It could be teams that they'll be going at who will be sitting deep. Canada's going to be ranked higher than probably a couple of teams in those groups. So do you want that player? Do you need to have a team that can unlock a deep block or a team that's going to have to defend when a Tanny, for example, will come in really handy for all that off-the-ball work?
Can they get drawn against anybody in their own confederation right out of the gates? No.
No, only Europe can. Europe can have two per group.
Right, right.
Anyone else cannot.
So no Curacao.
Thank you. That's a good point.
I saw what you were doing there. I saw what you were doing there, Forrest. I was like, oh, he's going to bash Sharms on this.
Yeah, that's very, that's
very going back to promise and working against the low block, like, I was at Stats Saputo when our men's national team was playing Australia, and he came in as a sub, and there was that occasion from the right flank with Miller, and it was promise, and it comes in. And it's a Schaff that misses that sitter, right? Like, it was saved, and like, credit to the goalkeeper, but that should have been buried. But it all was born out of the movement and the understanding and the partnership there when Promise David came in. So like, there's more nuance to his game, I think, that we give him credit for. I know that we're all very much pushing for him to start. But like, the other side of it is people are like, well, no, he's more one dimensional. He's going to run at defenses and like kind of take advantage of tired legs, come on as a sub. But, you know, to Jimmy and Forrest's point, like, start him, because like, there, he does have an ability with his movement that's more sophisticated, again, than we could give him credit for, that he can disrupt defenses and he can create space for others.
It's funny. We're just discussing those two options to partner John David.
Yeah.
There are. There's Carl Aaron, who knows, might rediscover his form, get healthy. Let's hope so. Dan Jeberson, you know, didn't make the last camp, but, you know, he's played pretty well, actually, in the league championship so far this season. There's still options. Lots of football left between now and then, but this is what we do. Hey, okay, I've got a comment now, which, speaking of, I like this one. It made me laugh. There's a lot to unpack here. Okay. This is from Ian McDonald. I really do enjoy this one. Okay. New center back looked comfortable, very steady, like Victoria was. Yeah. That was not a stunning performance by any match against Venezuela. This did not look like players trying to impress. John David looks totally lost. Kone's goal was going wide, Kripo's distribution was as great as Dane Sinclair's was awful against Ecuador. Eustaquio made three unforced errors with the ball. Nelson is no big upgrade to Miller or Chef. Promise is so much slower than Tanny. He's looking like a late sub when looking for a goal. Larea was great again. Waterman looked capable again. Sigur was freaking A+. If Alistair Johnston is back to his best when he returns, Marsh has to get Sigur some time in central midfield. He has all the attributes. I disagree with Craig about the fakery and diving. It's just not the Canadian way. I detested that in my teammates. To me, everyone else does it is not a justification. I'll never forget against Argentina, De Paul's disgraceful diving and faking injury, men acting like babies. I'm with Sharman about the CONCACAF opponents doing well at World Cup. Fug them. The cheating, spitting, diving, win at any cost to your honor, bastards that they are. Oops. I apologize so for expressing my true feelings there. So un-Canadian, eh? Have a nice rest of your day. I love that from Ian. He laid it out there. He went off on one. And we need more of that. I think he felt better after that little spew.
I love it even more that when he said he agreed with you, he said, I'm with Sharmar instead of Sharman.
But far more agreeable is Sharmar than Sharman, I find, in general. But do you any of that you want to talk about?
Yeah, I don't want us to play completely fair and play ourselves right out of a World Cup. It's win at all costs.
Mm-hmm.
These shit bags are going to do it to you. And so just give it right back to them.
They started it.
Yeah, you have to have, there needs to be a healthy dose of cynicism, right? You can't be naive going into these matches.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it is what it is. And I don't like it either. But I remember the Gold Cup final when Carlo Corsino was like telling him, if you get in the box, somebody touches you, you get your ass on the ground. Like, give the referees something to think about. And sure enough, he did. Mind you, it was a foul.
if it's an actual foul. Like, that's the one that I missed. I had to leave early, and you guys were like, what was Amy talking about when she said that we had national team training and we were practicing diving? Like, it wasn't just, like, theatrically going over. It was, like, a ball slipped into the box, and then you would, like, start as on a sprint, a defender and an attacker, and then you would, like, go into a tackle, and then you would have to go over because you were being... They were maybe getting the ball, but they were getting you as well. And they would have to practice going down instead of standing up, which was the Canadian way. And our coach didn't understand it. And we probably did it for 7 or 8 minutes. And he was like, you guys are terrible. We're never doing this again. But in the game, if you get fouled in the box, please go over. And we will never speak of this again. Because we were so awful at it.
It's a mindset for us. It's not something that Canadians think about. Like, we think about fairness and sportsmanship and all these types of things that, you know, isn't conducive for winning football games. Sometimes we'd like to change it, but unfortunately it's a big part of the game.
I mean, if I thought there was any hope of the game changing and eradicating itself of that cancer, that scourge, then I'd say, no, let's lead the charge here and say, no, we're not doing it, but it's not going to change. And I hate it. I mean, there's levels, right? Like you said, Dubs, if you're being fouled, okay, I understand a bit of embellishment to make sure the referee saw it.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm fine with that. But it's the grabbing your face when you get hit in the belly. Mm-hmm. This can be ruled out, right? I think that can be ruled out. We have VAR for a reason. If you see, sometimes it's clear. You see the Rivaldo incident at the World Cup in, when was that,
2002.
Right. Sorry, yeah. Yeah, the corner flag, right?
Yeah.
When he gets, was it a kick in the shin or something? And he
hit him in the knees.
His knees. He should be banned for life.
Yeah, that should be cracked. They should absolutely be suspended for that.
And you can clearly see someone's faking a lie in there, right? So there's no reason why retroactively you can't look at those incidents for sportsmanship, for the good name of FIFA and upholding all that's right in the world.
I agree. There should be punishment because you got to think as well, the players have to wait 4 years to get to a World Cup. And then you finally get there. And that's the dream, is to get to a World Cup. And then you get a player that does something like that, holds their face when a ball hits their knee. And now you're sent off and you miss the next game. Your World Cup's over. It's wrong. They should be reviewed and those individuals mm-hmm. that do that and act like that should be suspended.
It would go away, right? It would go away.
Yeah.
If the officials are strong enough to rule on it.
Yes. Yeah.
So why
let's hope they do that one day, but
one day
they're more worried about getting $2,000 a ticket than they are fixing that.
Yeah. Dubsy, you got another comment there?
Oh, yes, but before it's going to shift gears because it's about the caps. And before we did that, did you guys see, and I wish I'd pulled it, but it only came to mind now when we were talking about it because I think it was on Twitter, and it was somebody had put together a best 11 of our injured players for our Canadian men's national team. Yeah, I was like, oh, Christ. Yeah, because it's like not only our back line, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of players now. Yeah. And so I was like, oh, that's like a really sobering thought. And I mean, I know there's time for these players to come out, but I think it was spurred on by comments from the Rangers manager talking about Cornelius being out for the remainder of this year. And then just obviously that's the entirety of our potential starting back line.
Sorry, right? Dubs, one question. When they mentioned Cornelius and he said this year, did he mean 2025 or the season? Yeah.
Okay. No, until the end of 2025.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got it written down somewhere. He said basically it's not a good one. It's a serious one.
Mm-hmm.
But not talking season here. But you wonder because Derek, he wasn't played in that first game against Ecuador because of an injury. They played him against Venezuela. Was it the same injury? Right? I don't know. I hope not.
Based on the comments of the coach that it seemed like it was a re-aggravation and a worsening of the injury or the knock that he was already carrying that was a muscular injury.
Well, with Fonzie drama around that situation, right? Already Canada's medical staff is under the spotlight, so you hope that's not the case.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So are we okay to shift gears?
Yeah, sure.
Let's do caps. That. So this is, it could be... As a response, I think it was on yesterday's, if I'm not mistaken. So I was talking about the Caps going into that Western Conference final or the semifinals, James Sharmar, and that they're pretty decimated back there, but I'm sure Sorensen has something up his sleeve. So I feel like this is in response to what I said. So the Caps have Jodrik Pupe and Sebastian Schanlau available at center back to cover. Johnson could come in at left back and let Laborda move to center back alongside Priso as well. We mentioned how well he's done as that makeshift center back. Plenty of coverage for next man up, same as it's been all season. We'll be fine. Up the Caps. And that is from Inanimate J. So thank you for your comment.
Cool. True. They've had injuries all year. They've had a ton of injuries all year and they've found ways to keep going, right? And keep winning. Depth is everything.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
Really spurred on the conversation.
I like that comment. I like the confidence, but I still think you're missing a couple of stellar defenders there.
Mm-hmm. Well, but like you said, Craig, earlier, I mean, what we saw from San Diego last night wasn't particularly, I mean, listen, Dreyer's incredible. He's a really good player, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. I mean, aside from him, I mean, they weren't that terrifying moving forward.
No, you got to expect them to be better though, because they've been fantastic all season.
Yeah, really good sign.
So maybe the lines confuse them a little bit, and they'll be gone like you said on the
second. Yeah,
could be. Any other comments you have there, Dubs?
No, you go because it's a here. Comment no, about
caps. Yeah. This one here. I agree. This is from P. Coleman. I agree that Berhalter is underrated. I also love his competitive attitude, revving up the fans, and he was getting under Boanga's skin. He was, man. He's the passion, like I said yesterday. I love it. I like that kind of leader on the pitch. And as a founding president of the Berhalter fan club, Jimmy, it's more than just the football, right? It is that. He can lead a team. He seems to be able to throw a team on his shoulders and lead the charge from both the from within the fans to the pitch itself.
Yeah, he's got everything. I genuinely really, really like this guy. I said it before, look, if I was a manager, I'd be going after that guy because I think he's one of the best midfielders in the league. He does absolutely everything. Defends well. He can join the attack. You know, just has so much energy about him. Fans love him because it's at you know, that hard workmanlike mentality that he has. Mm-hmm. But he's a special player, that's for sure, for that team. He makes them tick.
Mm-hmm. Last few years, he's just gone out a different level.
I'm a little upset that he's not part Canadian? Of Northern North America. What did you say?
Canadian?
Yeah. Yeah. Like it would be
Northern crazy. North America.
Wow. Northern North
America. Are we not allowed to say Canadian anymore?
No.
Well, you're not.
People might be offended by it, Jimmy.
Oh, yes. Right. No, I'm just saying like, he was born in the wrong place of North America, because he would have been, I think he'd be a great Canadian, a great addition to the Canadian side.
A Grenadian?
Yes. God, I'm having a rough time this week. Here's mine.
All right.
Doug Simonite. Thank you, Dougie Simes. Definitely an off day for Wagger. So that cut me deep, Dougie. I just want you to know.
That's in reference to all your Gwen Stefani comments yesterday.
Wow.
At least Brett, our boy Brett Litwiski was listening and appreciating the comments.
I don't know if he was.
He definitely wasn't. I was like, did you listen to the podcast? I wanted to ask you guys, so Berhalter, we've talked about his quality on dead balls. You notice he goes to the corner and then Laborda obviously scores after Lurie should have held that header from Mueller, and then it goes to him kind of to the left of Lurie, and then he scores between his legs. Mm-hmm. Laborda does. But Berhalter's routine at the corner stick is he grabs a water bottle. And he's kind of letting like the noise of the fans kind of wash over him. It's a little bit performative, but I love it. Has a drink, and then he sprays the ball. You notice that?
I did.
So is there something to that for us? If he's like,
well, I think the drinking goes back to Willie Johnson back in the 80s when he went over to the corner flag. I believe it might have even been in San Diego. To be honest, I can't remember exactly. But there's a beer and he chugs a beer, whips the ball in, and they score.
Stop it.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So if you look in the corner at BC Place, it actually says Willie's Corner.
Yes.
So I think he knows about that. And I think that's where the drinking comes. I don't know. I don't remember Willie Johnson spraying the ball with beer or anything. But
would that have had an effect? Were you thinking that, Dubs, that it had an effect on Lurie's being able to handle the ball?
Yeah. Do you think so, Forrest? Like you're playing in a bone dry pitch.
Yeah.
It's turf. And then he's spraying that ball before he's whipping it in. Like, is that a factor as a goalkeeper?
I wouldn't like it. I wouldn't like it. Yeah. Cause you're expecting, if you're coming for it, you're expecting a dry ball, which you're going to, you know, your technique is going to be slightly different.
Jimmy, stop. Just stop, Jimmy. I can see your fucking face right now. staying on the set pieces here, just kind of. So Ali, I don't want to get into too much of a detailed conversation. You haven't got time, but the whole, you know, Richie, Fonzie, Ali on that left-hand side. Ali is without doubt the best set piece taker on this Canadian team, right? In the last number of games, he's shown that he's fantastic. He's a weapon.
Eustachio was quite good.
Yeah.
And sure. Schwanier has also been good.
But he's not yet. So Schwanier is not going to play.
Just saying, like other dead ball kind of quasi specialists with our men's national team, I would say it's those three.
Yeah, but Ali's been like a class above, I think, the last number of games. What's more important to you as coaches? Would it be someone with that ability from a set piece, or someone with Richie's ability to just, you know, hustle, drive, play, get under the skin? Because it seems it's gonna be one of those two players not starting for Canada if everyone's healthy, right? If it seems that way. So what is more important?
Good question.
I think it's you look at what you have in that 11. You're trying to field your best 11. You look at who else has those qualities. So it might be a downgrade in one of those areas, but you have it in Eustachio, even if Ali has performed better or has been more consistent in terms of the quality on service. But I think Richie, in being Canada's best player in both of those matches across this past window, you can't drop him. Just in what he's giving you in terms of quality, does he necessarily have the ability with his left foot to whip in a ball? especially like an early cross. Like if he's getting to the byline, sure. I think like his service at that point is good. It's reliable. It's threatening. But I think you lose it because he's not naturally left-footed kind of deeper in the pitch, or just as you gain access to that attacking third. But with his performances, you can't drop him. So I think there you take him over Ali. You assume Fonzie's back as that left back, or you put Richie back there and you push Fonzie up, whatever you do if you're Jesse Marsh, and then you trust Eustachio on your dead balls.
Mm-hmm.
You agree? I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. Eustachio is good at deliveries too. But Ahmed has been fantastic in that area. Yeah, in the last
game. And listen, the fact, and again, every good team in the world is going to have similar selection dilemmas. This is a good thing.
It's a great thing.
It means some really, really great players sitting on the bench at the World Cup. And you're going, how the hell is he on the bench?
Yeah.
And I thought the Ryan Gauld interview, which I listened to, was terrific, you guys, when he was on, him talking about Ali, filled with admiration for what he's added to his game, especially since that ankle injury that he suffered with Canada, right? Yeah. His game has just skyrocketed in terms of what he offers, like the physicality, which I think was a quite literally a knock on him, right? Mm-hmm. That he was pushed off the ball. He's added that edge to his game. Mm-hmm. And his ability to dart inside, to stay outside, to suck defenders in, to bring other players in, to combine, like he's been electric. He's been so good. He's been arguably Canada's. I mean, it's been Richie Larea and everybody else, I feel like, the last couple of windows, but Ali Ahmed's name is right up there in terms of Canada's best player.
Yeah, sure. He's dangerous.
Yeah, check out the Ryan Gauld interview if you haven't heard it. He was really candid. It was great. And it was also Wonga's last good show.
So forever. Wonga's forever. Played
himself off this best five. You're on the bench, Wonga.
Yeah, that's not a problem. Major announcement.
Yeah, Wonga on the bench.
Yeah.
You're our Richie.
Yeah.
Or Ali. You make your mind up. Okay, I think that's probably it. Any other comments you want to get to quickly, Dubs? I know you probably have some mildly amusing ones.
No, it's kind of can of worm-ish. I'm not going to share it.
Okay. All right. We're an hour in already.
Yeah.
Save. I got a real quick one. Speaking of Dubs. Smackin' 11. I learned today Amy is cool the moment she compared something to Ninja Gaiden, like it's an everyday thing everyone should know about. Much respect. And Amy wrote, I think it just means I'm old.
True.
Firstly, no surprise, Dubs saw that and replied to it. She's the only one that doesn't.
We were looking for comments for her comment show. What am I supposed to do?
I don't think so.
We all. I don't know. Does anyone else in the show know what she was talking about when she mentioned?
No.
No, me neither. I played off like it did. Didn't have a clue, so I looked it up afterwards. It was a computer game.
It was Nintendo
original
game.
Nintendo.
Yeah.
So the Walsh family in like the early 90s, our gift as kids is we shared a Nintendo. And we got right into it with the Mario Brothers and Ninja Gaiden. We're like and obviously, was it Duck Hunt that came with Mario Brothers? Mm-hmm. And our other game that we had was Ninja Gaiden. It was the only kind of computer game that I liked. And I would play it for like 20 minutes and be like, all right, I'm done. But I still really liked it. And it was cool. Ninja Gaiden, but I don't know the updates. I have no idea of like the lore and the backstory because I'm sure other people do.
Oh, they do. And we're going to hear from them.
Well, Ryan Gauld, I mean, he surprised us with Deacon Blue.
Yeah,
he did.
I had to look it
up. There was actually a reference to Deacon Blue. One of the comments was a reference about
Deacon Blue. Yeah, somebody said, I got me listening to Deacon Blue or something, right?
Yeah, but there's also their name came from, there's a football reference. And did I not put it in there? I was going to. Anyway, I'll try and find it for the next show.
But it also came from another artist. I think that was the right. Was it, Deacon Blue came from another song. But I listened to Deacon Blue over the weekend because of Ryan Gauld.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. Okay, wait, I've got it here. No, there's no comments in it. Oh, no. Yeah. Deacon Blue got its name from a Steely Dan song about a USA college football team.
That's yes. Thank you. Who was that from? Ooh. Give them credit.
Canada Soccer, etc.
Okay.
I like that. Very amazing.
What a band, Deacon Blue. Mm. Almost as good as the House Martins. Remember that?
Oh, I do. God, I so do.
Good. Yeah. Good old days. 80s music. Nothing like it. Soft Sell, right, Jimmy? Like it.
No. You, gotta,
All right, that's Footy Prime for an hour in. So much for these 35 to 40 minute shows we agreed upon about 6 months ago. It just doesn't happen, does it? Anyway, I hope you enjoyed it. We're back tomorrow.
Yeah.
What are we doing tomorrow?
We have Adam Van Cuverden coming up.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
We've got a real life politician and an Olympian.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And a minister of sport.
Top class athlete.
Yep.
Who was a big ally, big friend of the World Cup in Canada, by the way. And we'll find out. What is the World Cup Sherpa? We're going to find out what that is.
Is that what he's calling himself?
That's what he's. That's the name.
No, he's a Sherpa. Yeah.
Sherpa, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Like, subscribe, comments, as you just heard. We do refer to your comments, so please get into us. And we love those 5-star reviews. Helps the algorithm. All right, so until tomorrow, thank you, everybody, and cheers for this.
Make sure to subscribe to Footy Prime wherever you get your podcasts and follow us on Twitter at @footy_prime and on Instagram at @footyprimeig and visit wearefootyprime.com and sign up for our newsletter.
Oh, I thought you were going to play Gerald Ford again.
You're going to play Deacon Blue? There we go.
Hi, this is Gerald Ford and this is Comments on Footy Prime. Now back to the grave.
So out of left field.
So good. So random.